Today's guests and topics. First they came for the smokers, and I didn't complain. Then the drinkers, then the gluttons. And when they came for me, I had no grounds to complain. So writes Jack McHugh on Michigan's narrowly targeted taxes and fees. Jack is a legislative analyst with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Could these consumption taxes become a bad legislative habit? And do they fix the spending problem? Find out when I discuss the issues with Jack in the show's second segment. Jack, how are you?
Well, good afternoon, Mark. It's great to be with you this afternoon and with your wonderful audience.
Are we catching you way up there in the Upper Peninsula?
Well, no, actually I'm over in Lansing.
That's, oh, you are?
That's where I'm based these days.
Oh, okay. Well, Jack, in your article dated October 25th, you wrote, and this is available on the website, by the way, www.mackinaw.org, despite 3 years of receiving insufficient revenue to cover the state's budget, Michigan's political establishment has not tried to raise general income, sales, property, or business taxes. Now, my sense, Jack, is that this position arises out of political considerations rather than from fiscal principle. You continue to write that state legislators have found ways to increase revenue by increasing more narrowly targeted taxes or fees. And you outline several of these in your article. And then the question you pose is this a spending fix? Jack, in reading through these, one readily concludes that they are not spending fixes. So with that established, I'd like for you to briefly highlight a few of these targeted taxes and fees so that the listeners may grasp the tactic, and then let's discuss the larger issue of spending.
Absolutely. Well, you're absolutely right. These do not get at the issue of excessive state spending. And it's true, the legislature has not passed general sales, property, income, and business tax increases because there is a political price to pay for that in our era, which is too high for them. So they've looked for ways that they can nip and tuck around the margin, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of these over the last two years were listed in the article you cite. The most recent one, and this got a lot of attention, was the bill to move up the county property tax that you have to pay, so that you'd have to pay it in July instead of December. And the political establishment insisted that this is not a tax increase, but somehow they ended up with $183 million more by doing this than if they hadn't. And the effect of this, if you're, say, a business that pays $10,000 a year in county property tax, which many do pay a lot more than that, this is essentially puts a liability on your books of $4,200 that never goes away. You have, your book value is now $4,200 less than it was before this. Other measures, they passed a tax on the Detroit casinos, raising that from, or increased it from 18% to 24%. And of course, one of the hopes for the casinos in Detroit was that they would build hotels and big facilities that would become tourist attractions and have some, corollary effects. This makes it less likely that the casinos will do that. Now, we at the Mackinac Center, we don't think that gambling is any long-term fix to a troubled economy, but
well, neither are high taxes on smokers and bad drivers either.
Well, that was another couple other revenue increases. They raised the cigarette tax by 75 cents per pack, and it made it the second highest in the nation. And this is supposedly going to cost smokers $300 million a year, but a funny thing happened on the way to the revenue estimating conference, and that is the cigarette sales are down by 20% or so. So people are finding alternative ways to get them for the most part, have quit. Which of course some in government would say that's a good thing that they quit, but that's not really any of the government's business, whether I choose to smoke.
Right.
We also had, this was a very sneaky one. There's essentially a 1 cent gas tax.
I was hoping you were going to get right down and start using that word, Jack.
Yeah, you know, it's called a underground fuel tank regulatory fee. But, you know, when you buy gas and put it in your car, it looks, feels, quacks, and hurts just like a 1 penny a gallon gas tax. And in a way, it's worse, because the regular gas tax is at least a user fee. For the most part, it goes into concrete. It pays for the roads we drive on. You know, there's some lifted off the top, and there's some wasted in mass transit boondoggles. But for the most part, it goes into the roads. Well, 1 cent of that is goes to clean up underground fuel tanks that were leaking over the years, and it was a serious environmental issue. A lot of that has been done. There's enough money in the fund that's been funded by this tax to take care of most of the rest of the job. So what they did, and the tax was supposed to expire at this fall, they said, no, we're going to let that tax go for another 6 or 7 years, and we're going to basically steal it and use it for other stuff, other spending. So the bottom line is Michigan motorists are going to be paying $30 million a year more for, to pay for general government spending, and that'll be, in the form of a gas tax.
You know, any one of these in isolation certainly is not that damaging, but in aggregate, it certainly points to the fact that the legislators are loath really to address the spending issue. And I think we have many a state that ramped up spending based on some very, well, perhaps overly optimistic forecasts, and got themselves into trouble and have created structural deficits, meaning a gap between ongoing tax revenue and ongoing spending programs. And the persistent solution, Jack, always is reduce spending. And, Jack, this is a business-minded, fiscally responsible bit of advice. Is it really politically practicable in this type of context?
Well, it is, but it requires some strong leadership. I will tell you that there is a tremendous amount of angst in the House Republican caucus right now, because they just lost 5 seats. Their majority is only a 2-vote margin right now, and they're looking around for reasons as to why that happened. And the explanation that a lot of people are saying is, you know what, you lost your brand identity as the tax cutting and spending cutting party. Because the Republicans in the legislature, rather than standing up for, you know, what their party traditionally made its name on, which is cutting taxes, they've really gone along with a lot of these things. And this is one of the elements that is really putting Michigan at a crossroads right now in deciding what it wants to be when it grows up. The question is, are we going to be a high-tax, high-regulation state like those in the Northeast? And with that comes declining incomes, declining standard of living, and declining population. Or are we going to go in a different direction and try and be a low-tax, low-regulation state like those in the South and the Southwest, which means more jobs, growing incomes, and a state where our children and our grandchildren aren't forced to move out by economic necessity.
Welcome back to The Careful Capitalist. I'm Mark Robinson, and on the line with us is Jack McHugh. Jack is a legislative analyst with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Jack, I wanted to stay on what we were discussing with regard to Michigan and its tax competitiveness. And the Tax Foundation in Washington, D.C. wrote that states do not enact tax changes in a vacuum. Every tax change will in some way change the state's competitive position relative to its immediate neighbors and the region. Ultimately, it will affect the state's national standing as a place to live and to do business. Implied in that statement is both a threat and a challenge. What's your thinking on that, Jack?
Well, that's there is an implicit threat. It's just the reality of the world we live in now. We have a relentlessly competitive world economy, and you compete or die in this economy. And Michigan, in order to be competitive, you have to have a favorable business climate. Now, Michigan is still a high-tax state, And we are a high regulation state, and in some ways that's getting worse. Some people, you know, during the 1990s, we did make a lot of progress in getting ourselves from the extreme in some of those things, but we still have a long way to go, and we pay a price in this lack of competitiveness. For example, between 1995 and 2003, Michigan finished 51st among the 50 states and the District of Columbia in employment growth, with just a total of just 1.4% new jobs created. We have dropped from 23rd to 30th among the states in per capita gross state product. And between 95 and 2003, we finished 49th out of 50 in D.C. in per capita income growth. So we really pay a price for not getting our act together in terms of creating a better business climate in this state. So, you know, that's why I said before the break, we're at a crossroads now in determining what kind of state we're going to be. We're going to, you know, continue the modest progress that we made during the 1990s toward, making ourselves, putting ourselves in a better position competitively with other states and with other countries around the world. Or are we going to go in a different direction? And it really comes down to cutting spending, government spending, because that is the prerequisite without which none of these other things can be done in terms of getting our tax house in order.
Well, basic fiscal responsibility and running it as though it were indeed a business. And for some reason, there's a disconnect once we have the political motivation rather than the profit motivation. And Ayn Rand wrote that the only way we can change the thinking of others, Jack, is through example and persuasion, and certainly you folks at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, your writings up there are certainly thought-provoking and quite persuasive. And on that website, www.mackinac.org, is a link to michiganvotes.org, and you are the editor of michiganvotes.org, correct?
You bet. This is a website that lets citizens go on and basically create a custom voting record guide for any legislator on an issue of your choosing. So you can say, show me Senator Alan Sanborn's votes on tax and spending increases, and boom, there they'll all be in two or three line descriptions of each.
Well, I looked at that in doing some of the basic research for our discussion today, and you also allow for visitors to the website to post their comments on actual and proposed legislation. And Jack, I think some of the best writing comes in the commentary from those that visit the website.
This is great fun, this feature.
It really is, and they use the what one would call, which is very effective in debate, calling it the reductio ad absurdum, in just reducing this thing down. I have never read some things as more scathing that have literally reduced things down to the absurdity of the whole thing, and very pointed, very educational, and in this instance, at least, very entertaining also. Jack, always a pleasure to have you on, and I appreciate you joining me today on The Careful Capitalist.
Well, thank you, Mark.